Welcome to Fundamentally Human, a podcast about mental health topics unpacked in an easy-to-understand way. My name is Shervin, and I'm your host. Let's get started. The topic discussed today may be difficult, intense, and triggering for some individuals. If you find yourself feeling overwhelmed, I encourage you to reach out to your support system or call a crisis line. You can also pause and listen to the episode in segments. Please do what is most comfortable for you. I wanted to touch on this topic because it can be a symptom of numerous mental health disorders, and it might even be a thought that many of us have had at least once in our lives. Suicide can affect people in multiple ways, whether someone is thinking about it, knowing someone who is contemplating it, or struggling from a loss of suicide. It has become such a taboo word that people are scared to mention it or talk about it because they don't want to trigger others. When I saw Joanne post about her journey online, I was instantly in awe at her bravery, strength, and ability to open up about something so personal. Joanne is the founder of Bubble Talks, a platform to raise awareness for mental health, which she started by sharing the most intimate details of her own journey and hoping to inspire others to share their own challenges instead of holding them in. Thank you for being here today, Joanne.
Hi, thank you for inviting me today.
And just to really get things going and started, I'm wondering if you're able to tell us about your story, and please share whatever you're comfortable with, and you can even introduce yourself a bit too.
Hi guys, I'm Joanne. A little bit more about me. I'm ethnically Chinese, but I was born and raised in South Africa until I was 13. And then I moved to Hong Kong, which is where I am right now. I currently just graduated. We're going to get right into it. So the topic is suicide. So I'm going to share a bit how I got into it. So we can rewind back to 2017. Basically, I was pushing myself during my university studies. In the meantime, I joined a society, and there was a lot of workshops, events to organize, as well as I decided to do a summer internship working at an event company. And I didn't really have any supervisor to really guide me. So it was just a lot of pressure, because imagine a whole expo and this huge part, like 3-day cooking competition with like 100 chefs. I was just given this project. And on top of that, I was also trying to have that, you know, teenage summer fun time, going out partying, as well as I was also doing a service volunteer project class as part of my university course, as well as also joining the United Nations symposium. So this spanned out between, I would say, half a year. So as you can see, I've been trying to do all of this, and I was not resting at all. Imagine just partying, working. So your mind's just like, it's just rolling the whole time. And when I got to go back to school again, I was just so stressed out. I missed the first 2 weeks of school because I was busy organizing the expo. And suddenly I just felt so overwhelmed with school. I didn't have a break. I would be doing all of this work. I wouldn't even rest one day at home. I would just be going this place, that place. And I know that we're like the burnout generation. We just like keep working until basically our bodies collapse. And that's what happened to me. So I'm super extroverted. And when I got back to school, I was like, I like started zoning out of class. I didn't have an appetite at all. I'm super extroverted, super outgoing. And my friends invited me to go out, and I was like, I do not want to go out at all. And I'm like, what is happening to me? Like, I didn't even have the energy to change clothes. I didn't want to shower. I know you're like, what? But yeah, like, and I also had immense neck pain from accumulation of all the things that I was doing, like all the stress. And my mom took me to see Western Chinese medicine. So anything you could think of, like physio, chiropractor, acupuncture, cupping, everything you could name. And the, it felt like the weight was, the world was, like the whole weight of the world was on my shoulders. It felt like that. And it was just so painful, this like neck pain. And I tried everything and I felt bad, burden. I felt like a burden to my parents, burning all their money they're using on me. And it's just not working out. Yeah. And then started noticing, like, I don't know what's up with me, but I know something is wrong with me. So I finally decided to go see a counselor in university, which is the most scariest. Am I allowed to swear a bit?
You can say whatever you want.
It was as scary as shit. You know, admitting to yourself, like, okay, I have a problem, and then making an appointment to see a counselor. I sat down at, in the room, and she was like, she gave me a pamphlet. It was like brochure, and there's like symptoms of depression. And I'm like thinking, I'm not depressed. And she was like, if you have 3 to 4 symptoms on this booklet, you need to be concerned. I read it and I was like, bam, I had all 15 symptoms of depression and I had no idea. And even she was taken aback, like, wow, like, yeah, it didn't seem like that. And I had no idea. And I was like, oh, I am depressed, apparently. So she gave me some meds. And what happened was, bear in mind, I've never taken meds. Like, my mom never allowed me to take pills. So, and also I have a phobia of swallowing pills. So suddenly, I guess the effect when I took it, it hit me really hard. And when I was in class, my teacher was talking and I was zoning out. I was doing a lot of comparing and like, look who I was then before and look at me now. And then I just entered this really dark loop, and it was like a dark phase. And apparently not only was I depressed, I had anxiety. So what that meant was a part of me wanted to give up and a part of me wanted to keep pushing. So it was like a tug of war is what I would always say to picture it. Imagine one part of you is like pushing you and the other one's like, ah, no, fuck it, give up. For me, I was just like, I didn't even realize it would affect me. And then suddenly, one morning, it was unbearable. It was winter, my neck was hurting. I literally wrote a note down to my mom, like my parents, saying like, oh, I don't want to be here in this world, like I appreciate it, but I feel like I'm a burden. And then that morning, while my mom was looking, I took a pillow and I tried to suffocate myself. But I remember clearly, she was coming out the toilet and I was literally waiting for her to see me do it. And you're like, what? Like, I'm also like, what? But I'm very aware that this is what happened, because that meant that my body was screaming for help, but I didn't want to ask for help. Because of that, my parents, the school was like very already concerned about me. And then what happened was, I'm not sure if my mom called the psychologist, told her about it. But what happened was, later in the afternoon, they called my parents in. And I've had some conflict at home, maybe Asian culture, as like, both of my parents are not educated, but that doesn't mean they're less hardworking, they're less intelligent. But I do feel like there's a lot of things that they were so busy raising 3 kids, they never had the time to really think about their actions and how it would affect the kids. So I was like, finally, yes, we can sit down together as a family, going to see counseling at school, finally. And then what happened was, I mean, even after the attempt in the morning, I was like, okay, I have to go to my economics, my accounting class. Like, that was the first thing I was thinking, like, I'm just going to go dress up, pretend as if nothing happened, go to school. And then the afternoon came and we went to school and the psychiatrist was like, Joanne, we should go get you checked up in the hospital. And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, I mean, I thought we're just here to talk together as a family, like some of the issues we've been having. And then they're like, yeah, we'll just go to the hospital, check you up. They sent an ambulance and then I got sent to the hospital. And the first thing they did was put me in a straitjacket. you know, the ones where you...
Oh, where you can't move at all?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
And I'm, like, a bit thrown off. I'm, like, what is happening? Like, this is not what I expected. And it was winter. It was... The whole ER room was crowded with people that are sick. And yet I was put in a whole isolation room to myself because I think I am the most dangerous because I'm harming my own myself. So... yeah, that's what happened. And then
do you think that made it worse that you were put in that, or would you have preferred not being put in that suit?
For sure, for sure. And to be honest, I was able to like even move around in it, but I was like, I literally could just stick my arm out, but I was like, I'll just stay in this. But it did make me panic, like, what is happening? All I'm thinking about is, what are my friends going to think? I didn't go to school. What about my project? Like, I'm only thinking about this. And then there's a woman that comes in and she's holding a paper and she's like, Joanne, you have to sign this. And I'm like, what is it? And they're like, we're going to sign you into a psychiatric ward. I was like, I'm not going. And she says, under the government, we're allowed to sign you in whether you want to or not. And she's like, we recommend you to sign it because it will lessen your time there and you'll be able to get out faster. So unwillingly, by force, I just signed it.
Wow. Sounds like they totally coerced you into that. And
for sure.
Did you feel like they even gave you a chance to have a conversation about it? Or do you think they made the right choice at that time?
At that time, I think things could have been handled differently. The fact that I just wanted to use my phone and text my friends, like, bear in mind that my closest friends, I was able to put a facade and a mask. Like, I used happiness to cover everything that I've ever felt. So it would become shocking to them that it's not that I just didn't go to school. I just disappeared from everywhere. I didn't even have the chance to say, like, hey, I'm not going to be in school. I apologize for not going to class. I apologize that I'm dropping out. And we already confirmed so much stuff about our projects. And the second thing I'm thinking is, oh my God, if I enter this ward, I have to defer a semester. I'm going to graduate a year later. I'm going to be a loser. Who's going to want to be friends with me? And that's what I'm thinking. I'm not even thinking what, like, hey, I'm sick or anything. I'm just thinking what other people are thinking because I was such a people pleaser. And yeah, and then that's how I went into the mental hospital, the psychiatric ward, which is a whole nother traumatic experience. But yeah, that's just how I got put in.
Wow. It sounds like it just all happened within 1 year. You have so much on your plate, and then depression and anxiety just hitting you like a truck on either ends, and then everything. Thank you for sharing all that, especially in such a public space, because like we mentioned earlier, and you brought up your own Asian culture, these things with any culture can be so taboo to talk about. And often people are afraid, or like you said, embarrassed or ashamed, and don't want other people wondering what people think of them. So I first heard about your story when you posted it on Facebook on Subtle Asian Mental Health. What led you to post it? Were you scared and that people would know about it, or that you would get a lot of questions? What was going on in your mind during that time?
Personally, for me, last November, I started Bubble Talks. That's when I felt the decision that I have to share my story, because during my journey, I felt so alone. No one could relate to me. Everyone around me was normal. That was what I was thinking. And I told my family, like, I'm gonna, you know, share everything with the world. And my family were like, if you do that, like, who's gonna, like, you know, want to marry you one day? And I'm like, really? That's the only thing you're thinking about? Like,
or our reputation, our family name, what are your aunties and uncles going to think? All the cousins are going to talk badly about you. I bet those are some of the things that came up, huh?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they didn't say that, but it was more concerned, like, you know, like, who would want to marry you one day? And I'm like, I told my family, like, and that is the reason why I have to do this. Like, because it didn't matter to me. I mean, I felt like I was taking a gamble. Like, you never know how the public's going to react. But before I chose to, you know, share with the world, I spent 2 years coming, like, changing myself, changing my mindset every single day, trying to change something that's so hard, like rewiring how you think of the world, your perception of yourself. I did a lot of reading, but once I finally, like, felt that I'm confident and made peace with myself, then I tried to share it with the people close to me. Like, and then after I shared it with close to me, I didn't say it, like, publicly for 2 years, and then I shared it on my social media accounts. And the craziest thing was I got so many DMs, people saying, like, I know what you're feeling, I've been there before. And I'm like, these people were the friends who I thought were, like, they're doing amazing, they're fine. And I'm like, if it's such a common thing, they all DM me, but they weren't willing to ever share or talk about it in a daily life. I'm like, why is this so, you know, covered up? And that's what motivated me more to even share, like, with the world that we need to raise more awareness so people don't feel guilty about it. And that's something many people face when they're experiencing their journey with, you know, mental health illnesses.
And just from what you said, it just makes me think how it's so normal to share about our positives and all the good things. But when people start being more vulnerable or being open about their own challenges, and I'm not saying everyone has to go publicly post about everything going wrong in their lives, but even talking to your friends and not having that facade all the time and recognizing that we're all human, I think it not only makes the friendship a bit stronger, but it helps so you don't feel alone in your situation. And did you feel that way afterwards when you spoke with your friends, or were you really nervous about what they were thinking about you? How did all that play out?
So thank goodness after my attempt and I was in the hospital, I thought I would have no friends, and the ones that came to visit me, it opened up my eyes to see who were the true friends that were there for me. Like, who were the ones that were there for me at my lowest point? You know, sometimes it's so hard. Like, you wouldn't really know who is really there for you when you have everything, when you're positive, or, like, even if you're popular, everyone's friends with you. But hey, who's going to be there at your lowest when you're not really, you know, you're down? And so it opened up my eyes to realize, okay, there are people that support me. And thank goodness, I mean, I'm still friends with them today. Oh, they allowed me to basically unplug all the emotions, everything I said, and I just, like, exploded and unloaded onto them. But that was my way of recovering, just finally letting it go.
And just to wind back a little bit, going back to that situation with the pillow, what was going through your mind at that time? You mentioned you wrote a letter and everything. What were some of the emotions that you had?
So what I would say is, for someone who even thinks about suicide or has suicidal tendency, or even that thought, like, I don't want to be here in this world, if I had to explain it, I really try to think of something for people to easily visualize. Imagine you're in a box in this, you're a tiny person in this black box. And for example, it's like a shoebox. And at first it's uncovered. But the thing is, when you get lost into the deep, when you're more deeper into that thought and you go into that path, and then suddenly you get trapped in there, and then suddenly the lid closes and you're trying to push out from it, but you can't. And, you know, it felt really alone, and it felt like you're stuck. You want to help yourself out, but you're stuck. So if you're asking me now, like, what did I want to do, is I just wanted the pain to stop. Of course, there's no, like, it's not something that I'm promoting, or, like, you know, people that even have a suicidal thought, they have tried every method they can to stop their pain. And it's when they've exhausted all the solutions and they feel like they can't do anything, then they have that type of thought. Like, it's a permanent solution to a temporary problem, is what I feel. And if you're talking about my emotions, I felt like I was chained down. I felt like no matter how much I wanted to help, it's like the darkness is consuming you and you don't think logically anymore. Reasoning goes out the window. You can forget about that. It's just like this whole, it's like being sort of possessed by this sort of darkness at the same time. But there's the part of you that's humane that wants to fight for yourself too.
Yeah. Almost like an out of body experience. You're looking from yourself on the outside and you see it. Yeah. That's kind of what I'm hearing. Maybe I watch too many Christmas movies where they do that, but the way you describe it, it's really powerful because it just goes to show that a lot of people aren't alone in feeling this way, that chained down feeling where no matter what you do or how happy you might feel, there's just so much going on, or we're always our worst critics, and it just gets to you. How did your family react to it afterwards? So I'm hearing your friends were supportive, and I know your family saying, oh, how are you going to get married now? 4 years later, how are they dealing with it now?
So honestly, I'm coming from a place where my parents are very traditional thinking, and they have a mindset that, what is mental health? thrown under the rug. What is that? It doesn't exist. No. They don't believe it.
Even now?
I think at some point, like the previous generations, they have had mental health illnesses, but they weren't ever diagnosed about it. So I would say like during the journey was, although my parents, I remember prior to my suicidal attempt, my mom says people who would do that are selfish. And I think a lot of people would say that, like, you know, people who, they just want to escape the problem. They're selfish. And that's the worst thing you could ever say to someone. And I tried to explain to my mom that it's not that they're selfish, is they've exhausted all the solutions. And I told my mom, I actually felt like I was a burden to you. So I wanted to actually help remove that heavy burden from you. And of course, if you think about it, it's not, If you talk to a psychologist, it's really ironic how the person wants to help themselves by relieving the pain, but it's actually removing themselves from the world. But I do want to mention that although my family has had issues, they visited me every day in the hospital. I gave up on myself, honestly. I did. But seeing even my granny, she's 90 years old now. My parents, they came to visit me every single day in the hospital, and not every patient in there is fortunate to have a family or friends to visit them. Some of them have been there for many, 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 many months, or like maybe years too. I think there's also a limit how long you can stay there. But me seeing my parents and my granny come visit me, I'm like, okay, so they care about me. They're not judging what I did. And I mean, although growing up, they didn't really display very affection or that much like appreciation or being too, I mean, yes, they were very nice to me. They gave me everything they could have, but you know, sometimes when it comes to behavior or letting it out, it wasn't always the best situation at home. But then I realized that they're not giving up on me. And when the turning point, what happened was my dad made me listen to, like, you know, the song, You Raise Me Up.
Yeah. That one.
And even when I heard that song, my dad didn't ever allow me to cry growing up. I think it's just like a male thing, like, you know, you're supposed to suppress your emotions. And when he
don't
played
show
that
weakness song, kind of thing.
Yeah. And I don't blame them, to be honest. I'm actually super understanding. I'm trying to put myself in my parents' shoes. Like, what would I have done? And I'm like thinking about it, I would have probably done the same thing as them. But after I heard that song, it made me realize I started crying for the first time. I felt nothing, you know, feeling numb, feeling nothing is even a feeling too. And when I heard that song, it made me rewind back to like what my parents have ever, everything they've done for me. And they're still here fighting for me. And it's like they took so much effort and time and energy and love to raise me. And so I can't really, you know, give up on myself. So that's when I started. The turning point for me was to get out of the hospital. I lied to the doctor saying I was feeling well. Yes, honestly, the worst thing ever. And I was saying like, I'm feeling better. And no, you're not. Like the day I came out of the hospital, I still wanted to kill myself. I still had that urge, but I lied because, you know, that's the only way you're going to get out. And once I got out, I realized I just needed a break from everything. I didn't want to end my life. I just needed a break. Yeah. But ever since then, my family have been supportive. I've told my parents, like, I mean, we finally, it's never been easy. Like we, there was a lot of arguments coming out of the hospital, like, you know, trying to make them understand everything that I did. I felt betrayed by them. They felt betrayed by me. And it's all about like swallowing your ego. Even me, like, I'm not wrong. Like, no one wants to admit they're wrong. But then I had to think myself, like, was I ever in the wrong situation? And, you know, I started really sharing all the intimate feelings I felt about my parents. Like, actually, I do care about you guys. And they, and it's like, you voice everything out. And it's just like, they finally, the other person understands. And it's like, we're still developing our relationship. But now my parents are super supportive of what I'm doing. And even like me sharing my journey now, even with the world, I'm like, I might be known, but not be known for the, you know, the best positive reason out there. But they're there now, they understand more, because my family, my dad's side, they do have a history of, you know, mental health illnesses, like depression. And that's where I can say that a part of it might be genetics, a part of it is the environment, and a part of it is myself. Yeah.
Wow. Sounds like you just have had so much growth in the last few years. Not only that, just the way you're talking about everything, it just goes to show you had a lot of time to think about it. And I wouldn't necessarily call it a wrong situation, because I think, Joanne, what I know you for is someone who is brave and strong and recognize that there are a lot of things not going well for you. And there are decisions that you made that you overcame in the end. And it, another way to think about it even is, it's like you're swimming, you know, you're using a lot of your whole body to swim. You're trying to breathe. And sometimes it just gets so tiring. Sometimes someone might get a life jacket or an oxygen tank or someone pulling them out, but not everyone might have that. And I'm really glad that you're able to find what you needed to get yourself out of that situation. But even at the same time, would you say that if you had to go back, would you have hopefully avoided the whole situation, or is it something that is now a part of you?
I love the metaphor that you're saying with the swimming. It makes total sense. Like, if you really don't keep yourself swimming, you're really gonna drown without a life jacket. And the life jacket's like support from friends, yeah, and family. That's exactly what I had. If I had to go back, honestly, right now, I realize I've seen the positive out of this whole experience. I had to delay one semester to take a break from school, because I was just there's no way I would catch up. But it turned out that I was able to go on exchange to Finland, and I was fortunate enough to miss out the political protests happening in Hong Kong in 2019.
Oh, it was a crazy time then. I remember seeing all the news for that.
And I didn't have to graduate last year, which is, without my attempt to stay in mental hospital or the gap semester, I would have had to graduate last year, when I saw all my friends, the people I was supposed to graduate with, struggle with finding a job because COVID hit. I had one more semester to really think what I want to do with my life. And now I look back and I'm like, oh, I understand why it happened to me. It's even a blessing now, because the timing of it, although it was so shit at that time, like, why is this happening to me? And you look back now, it's like, thank you for happening. So time does heal everything. And it's learning how to accept that it's a part of me. And for me, I feel that a lot of people need a wake-up call to either change what they want to do with their life, motivate them to do something. And for me, it was just the whole traumatic experience, but I'm so blessed for it. And I feel that I was given a second chance at life. The light end of the tunnel reached out to me because I had to be the voice to keep sharing my story for those that are afraid. And I was afraid for the longest time, but it pushed me now to really knowing what I want to do, which is inspiring others. I can't change other people. I don't think that ever works. For me, I recovered changing myself. People can try to help you, support you, which is the initial thing that you need for covering. But everything else is really up to you to really help yourself, to really make the decision and choice. You can have a bad thing happen to you and let it chain you down forever. And that was a lot of events happening to me for 21 years of my life. I let it chain down. I would blame my parents for moving to Hong Kong. I would blame them for this. Blame them for putting me in the school, blaming them. And I never realized that I had the choice to see the positive out of it. And now looking back, it's okay. I screwed up. I did something wrong. It's not the best ideal situation. It's a part of who I am. And I'm thankful for it. And there's no regrets. I mean, of course, I'm not advocating for, you know, everything that I could do to harm myself, but I'm just saying that something has happened. You can't change your past, but you can change who you want to become.
I really like what you said about you have the choice to see in a different way, because when you're feeling so low and in such a bad place, it's so easy to only see all the negatives. But that's such a great reminder that you can see things in a different way. And it doesn't always have to be positive either. It could even be neutralizing the situation or normalizing it in your own mind rather than saying everything sucks or this is so unfair. Because the moment he starts thinking something is unfair, it is a snowball for just a disaster. And then you just go downhill and you think, why is this happening? Why is that happening? Nothing's going right. And then later on, you're going to be like, oh, okay, it wasn't as bad as I thought. Or, you know, it's just like you said, time takes everything to heal. And man, just listening to your story, it's so inspiring. I first heard of you when you posted maybe 2-3 months ago, but it's just something that's kind of been on my mind because it's so brave of you to share it. Or it even makes me think, you know, it's okay to not be okay and to just share your story. Letting that out a little bit can be so powerful. So you're not holding everything in and you're giving people a chance to throw that life jacket at you.
I can't really help people directly, but I just want them to know, like, you shouldn't feel ashamed because you ever had a bad thought in your mind. And knowing that life is not all about positivity. Everyone knows that. Like, everyone knows life's a roller coaster, life's up and down. But most people, honestly, if you think about it, like if I ask you, are you happy? Everyone's just going to say, no. No one's ever going to be like, today I feel positive.
That's so true. That's so true. Oh my God. I bet if I asked like 3 people, no one would be like, yeah, I'm so happy. It's usually you think about the bad things going on first, like, oh, I have this stress to do. I have to finish that deadline. Or this person at work annoyed me. It's never like, guess all these great things that I did. Oh man, that is so true. And Joanne, I have a question for you in terms of supporting other people. Or let's say if someone themselves, they might be thinking or contemplating suicide, or they know a friend who's feeling that way, what could you do? And for me, I've been working with the crisis text line or volunteering for them for the past year. And something they taught us was if someone ever presents with or they're contemplating suicide or suicidal ideation, it's okay to use the words, do you plan to kill yourself? Are you going to suicide? Things like that. Because if you try to hide it, it actually invalidates how they're feeling. Mm-hmm. And would you say that would have been true for you? Would you have preferred someone who is more direct and upfront during your situation?
For me, honestly, it was just a lot of things going in my mind. And seeing how it's evolved in the world, like right now there's so many support text lines, and that's the thing when it comes to mental health illnesses or even suicide, it's just so unique to the individual that I can't say there is a one fix solution saying to someone you can be direct, because some people, they don't want to admit like, oh yeah, I was trying to harm myself. To them, they might think like, no, that's not what I did. That's not, don't perceive me that way. I wasn't trying to hurt myself. If you ask anyone, for example, they probably tried to cut themselves, or no one's going to ask like, hey, were you trying to hurt yourself? I don't think they want to admit that, but having people around you saying, whatever you're going through, I'll support you and I won't judge you for that. And I won't, whatever we talk here will not go anywhere else. It's having that trust. And I understand I'm not an expert, right? So how your crisis text lines, they probably, or support hotlines, they have had experience, right? Because for me, I can only share on what my perception and my perspective. But I do feel that personally, if someone is in a situation like that, and you know, sometimes they're like, yeah, just talk to a family member or talk to friends, but what if your friends or family just don't get it? They don't understand you. They're like, why would you do that? How can you think like that? Why would you even, that's selfish, how can you? And then basically what you're doing is you're invalidating that person's thoughts. So then they're like, oh no, I'm not thinking that, like that's bad, I'm not. But then, and then it goes back and forth and they're like, yeah, I want to harm myself again. So sometimes I'm so happy that I'm so blessed and really thankful that there's such a group like on Facebook, like Subtle Asian Mental Health and all these different mental health groups, because back then, what, 4 years ago, I didn't know anything about mental health. I was still perceiving it as someone who's crazy. So yeah, sometimes if you have such a group like this, even if your friends or family may not be supportive, they might have hurted you, try to reach someone online. We're always dealing on digital platforms. If someone in the group who's dealing with something similar as you, they will be understanding and they will not judge. So reaching out to people, even online, even scheduling a phone call or a text message, that can help someone in a very critical point.
And with the crisis text line, I think we did somewhere along lines of 36 hours of training for it. And You know what, when you talk about like, oh, the way people react and it could be surprising, or you can feel ashamed, or you have a lot of guilt surrounding how you're feeling and you're invalidated. One of the biggest things they teach us when for this volunteer work is just being there for people. Of course, we have to address the whole safety plan and helping them, you know, what if they had a razor during that chat? Let's help them put that away in a different room, or putting the pills away so during that chat they're safe. And for them to share about their plans for suicide or their thoughts about it, it just validates how they're feeling. It's not necessarily encouraging them to do it, but for them to say it out loud, because it might have been the first or very few times that they've ever said it out loud to anyone, even to themselves. And it can be so powerful to even hear your thoughts come to life like that. And a lot of what we do is just to listen and empower people, or come up with strategies or a safety plan to keep them safe for that night. And I think sometimes they can be so scared to talk to their friends because they might not know how to respond. So it's just like you said, it could even be going online, whether it's through a crisis service, or I know in those Subtle Asian Mental Health or traits groups, you can be anonymous now. So if you do need a space to talk, it's moderated by a group of people. And while they might not be professionals or counselors, it is a space for people to share and talk. And that could be a very big first step for someone. So I like that you brought that up as well.
It's really great what you're doing, even volunteering and, you know, doing that training. Because honestly, I think going through my experience, I also want to know how I can help others. I also want to do the first mental health first aid training. For me, I think the best method is, on top of these crisis type support, like I always think back to prevention and prevention. Yes. So what can we do? Like, if you think about the world, everything has advanced except for the education system. We're still being taught the same thing. So instead of I want to be alive to be able to see that mental health is taught in school on top of physical health. It's not about sports. It's about how do we deal with rejection or isolation or bullying or these sort of things that actually might add up individually and trigger someone yes. to develop. Yeah.
I love that so much. Why do we have one specific course or class just for physical education? You're so right. Why do we not have a mental education course or workshops or, oh my goodness, that is so true. And it just goes to show that there hasn't been enough education or normalization or awareness about these things. People think, oh, you know, it's all part of life. Everyone gets bullied or rejected at some point. Okay, sure, that happens. But at what point do you learn healthy coping mechanisms? At what point do you learn how to validate these feelings or to even identify how you're feeling? Because a lot of us are taught growing up, you know, this is a sign of weakness. Just get over it. Don't worry about it. Keep moving on. Don't want to embarrass yourself. Don't want to be ashamed. Don't want to lose face. And those are all the things you're worrying about. But the biggest thing that you should worry about is how am I feeling and how should I deal yeah. with this? And that's the last thing you're thinking about. So it's so true. We need that mental education in school yeah. or even just talking about it more. Man, you bring up such a great point there.
Yeah. And schools, I do see that, you know, you've probably had one or two classes or courses or some teaching saying how to deal with bullying. But if you say one thing, no one's ever going to remember it. And because I feel that school is such a dynamics, I'm going to say that a lot of it is caused by a lot of TV series or like a lot of movies of how people are in groups
and everything.
Yeah, so exactly. True. And it's actually the media has controlled how we are. I'm really into technology and these AI. And I have a theory is that, you know, when you're on Instagram and you're looking at the feed, right? So what the algorithm does is usually whatever it tries to best tailor your interests and tries to show that targeted advertisement to you or that type of content. So what if, don't you feel that one day we already know like the social media is hearing our voices, what we're touching later on, it's going to advertise that. We already know that it's come to this point. But what if, for example, you're looking at your Instagram feed, it knows, for example, you see different types of, you know, popular, famous topics, and you click one that talks about depression or suicide. The algorithm just blindly the next day fills your whole entire feed of negative depression, suicide, because it doesn't know. It thinks you're interested in
it. You can't escape it.
You can't.
It's always there. Oh my goodness.
That's my theory. Like, that's what I think, that's what happened to me. It's this blind refeeding of what you're most tailored in.
And that becomes your normal.
Exactly. And when you're clicking onto your friend's Instagram, you're engaging like, oh, look at that girl. Look at my friends. It's going to feed all those like toxic content, like comparison, like, look what my friends are doing. Look at this. And I noticed that. So I started following influential people, entrepreneurship, positive, motivational. And then that's what I started, you know, it's like my daily newspaper. And before, you know, the news was very fair and honest. It wasn't really that much, but now everything is curated. It's filtered. It's been fixed up. So it's very important. I know you can't blame the media for everything, but you have the choice to also decide what you feed yourself on a day to day.
And that goes back to our whole physical education, mental education. You can feed yourself nutritious foods. And the same with your content. You can feed yourself with content that's healthy and better for you rather than all the more negative or full of toxic and comparisons and social media. Oh man, that's such a monster on its own. And I can go on about that for days because I quit Instagram, Snapchat, most of my social media probably over a year, almost 2 years ago. And it's been the best because, especially during COVID, I found that I just did what I wanted to do. And I didn't have to go look and see all these people are going on these vacations or like going on these different health things. And it was just mostly focusing on me. And on the flip side, I didn't have to see all the news that I didn't want to see. Every time I wanted to look at the news, I had the conscious time to Google it on my own and knowing, okay, this is news time. So I'm going to read the news now rather than mindlessly flipping through it and then just seeing all these things that I didn't intend to see. So I know not everyone can quit social media, but even being conscious of what you're looking or when you're looking, I think that can make a huge difference.
It's this addiction where once you're like scrolling, you can't stop. Like I went to a mental health event last weekend and there was something called doom scrolling, where you know how you watch one YouTube video and you just like start, you get inclined.
Oh, yeah.
More the worst.
And you just keep going and then the algorithm knows, and then you watch all the liked videos and it's like 2 hours later and you're like, oh crap.
Yeah.
Sleeping by now.
Yeah.
I like that. Doom scrolling. I mean, that still happens to me. Videos get addicting, but you know, in all seriousness, having to be careful with what you do look online. I think that can be helpful to keep in mind. And I'm sure most people know this. But Joanne, I really appreciate you taking the time to just share everything today and about your story and what people can do to visualize that for themselves. It doesn't mean they always have to pull themselves out, but understanding that it can feel that way to have all that weight on your shoulders and knowing that, you know, looking for that support or fighting for yourself can be so important to keep going. Is there anything you'd like to plug or share with the listeners?
Yeah, sure. Try to always be true to yourself. I admit I was a people pleaser. I was being the person who I thought, I was being the person to be liked by others, to please others. And I noticed that I was never true to myself, who I really was, because I felt that no one would accept the real me. And once I started becoming real me, sometimes I'd be wearing sometimes some sparkly stuff and maybe they're like, that's so extra. And I'm like, no, we need more extra in this world. Stop weirdness. Let's embrace that. And what I would say is everyone's like, yeah, just be yourself. But sometimes you're like, when you're so used to being someone else, you're like, who am I? And that's where I started. I have this book where I kept with myself during the mental health hospitals, where I was like, because my brain was so like effed up. Like I wrote, what was my favorite food? What's my favorite number? Who are my parents? Like, what's a birth date? It's such a simple thing, but it makes you try to identify again, who really are you? What do you like? When you're so focused on what other people like, what do they want? When you're so focused on other needs, you really start to lose who you are as a person. So I'd always say, be genuine to yourself, because you can lie to everyone, but you cannot lie to yourself. Your body knows that. You'll be sick if you're trying to go against who you really are. And another thing I would say is recovery. Life is a journey. It's all about learning. I recovered from reading a lot of books. So I like talking, listening to people, but the best way for me is to really hear from someone else their journey. It justifies and validates my thoughts. And also hearing that, okay, someone saying like, you can't be so pessimistic, or there's a lot of things that you think that you don't have a choice or control over your life, but a lot of the things is you do with a mindset shift, perspective, attitude. But it comes down to the person. Are you willing to unlearn everything that you have been taught to or raised up to? Are you willing to realize that sometimes it's your fault, sometimes it's the way you talk? And it's like dropping your ego down and knowing that, of course, you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to have happy thoughts all the time. It's learning to accept all the emotions, all the thoughts that come through your mind, and just don't block it. Don't release it, lash out on other people. If you're having a temporary emotional, like, you can release it out through maybe like exercise. You can listen to music. I would dance it out. So, I mean, I'm not a good dancer, but that was just my And I would also say that, you know, even though it's hard to find people initially to support you, having a good circle, you just need one friend, honestly, whether it's online or your family member, to really just be with you throughout your journey. Sometimes it could feel like 10 steps back, one step forward. And you're like, I thought I was making progress. Why am I going back to, you know, where I was last year? And then you start, if you pressure yourself into a number thing, like, I have to be this at this certain age, I have to be this certain weight, you're never going to be happy. Like, life is not measured in numbers. It's measured in time and moments and memories, right? And that's what true value is. So I would say that never feel burdened or guilty for things that have already happened. Yes, it might not have been the best decision. People around you might not agree with you. You might be perceived in such a negative light. Like, for the longest time when I was depressed, I thought, oh, I'm going to be a sore loser for the rest of my life. This is stuck with me. Like, and your mental health illness, you don't have to see it as a life sentence. It's something that you did, you come to peace with it. It's a part of you. And just learning how to embrace yourself. Yeah, that's what I would leave lastly to, you know, and motivate and help people feel that less lonely in their journey.
That's amazing. We had so many analogies today, but I love what you said about your mental health isn't a life sentence, meaning it can change depending on what you choose to do with it, what you decide to engage with or to look at. Just because one thing happened, it doesn't mean it's something that has to define who you are forever.
Exactly.
Thanks for sharing that, Joanne. So you can find Joanne on YouTube Bubble Talks, and she's also the founder of Equalify, which hosts non-conventional events in Hong Kong that revolve around stigmatized themes like mental health, female empowerment, and LGBTQ. So this marks the end of my second season on mental health disorders. I hope that by covering different topics and listening to other people's stories and experiences like Joanne's, it can raise awareness about these topics and you might have learned something new. Stay tuned for the next season about communicating with yourself and others. And thank you so much for joining me today, Joanne.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it talking to you too and allowing me to share my journey.
Of course. And to support my podcast and help reach others, please follow and share it with anyone who is looking to learn more about mental health. For any listeners who are visual learners or would like some more resources, I wrote a blog post about this topic and I invite you to read it on shervin.ca and to follow my Twitter at @HelloShervin for updates. Until next time.